Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Nancy Regan to the podcast. Welcome back, Nancy.
Thank you, James. Pleasure to be here.
Well, Nancy, for those that may have missed our first episode on reliability-centered maintenance, I want to make sure they have a good introduction to who you are. So you graduated from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University with a degree in aeronautical engineering. As a U.S. Navy civilian employee, you worked on implementing reliability-centered maintenance on common support equipment and also the Chinook CH-47 helicopter for the U.S. Army's heavy lift helicopter program. In 2001, you founded The Force, Inc., which allowed you to share your vast knowledge on RCM with a variety of industries and customers. More recently, you've also founded the website rcmtrainingonline.com. Did I miss anything in your brief bio that you may want to fill in any blanks with?
Well, the only thing I'd like to add is, so I've been doing maintenance and reliability for 21 years, and what I think is incredible about life is that it seems to serve up the people and circumstances you need to get you where you need to be. And you mentioned that I went to Embry-Riddle, and when I was a senior, the Naval Air Systems Command came and recruited for a civilian logistics intern positions, and I got the job. So I moved around a lot, but I ended up at the Naval Air Warfare Center in Lakehurst, New Jersey, as you mentioned. And I remember there was one day in August 1997 when my supervisor, Fred, called me into his office and said, "Nancy, we've been tasked from above to apply reliability-centered maintenance on aircraft launch and recovery equipment on our aircraft carriers." And I remember while he was still talking, I wrote down the words, reliability-centered maintenance. And so how was I to know that that one meeting on an otherwise normal day in August would quite literally set the trajectory of my life? So with that, I went on to become the RCM team leader at Lakehurst, like you mentioned, for aircraft support equipment. And then, of course, I left in 2001 to start my own business because I wanted to apply RCM to more diverse equipment. And so since then, it's just really been an amazing journey. I don't know, maintenance and reliability is in my blood. And I guess if you're listening to this podcast, it's in your blood also.
Yes, absolutely. And you had the great pleasure of being mentored by the late John Mowbray, which I think would be a great honor to have his wisdom and guidance in learning RCM.
Yes, one of the greatest treasures of my life is that he agreed to be my mentor. And he not only taught me about reliability-centered maintenance, he taught me a lot about business and about life. And two things that he taught me, two of the most important things he taught me are this. Number one, as a human being, time is our most valuable resource. So it's very important that we spend it wisely. And two, whenever I got kind of tripped up or, you know, I didn't know what to do next, or I was maybe a little frustrated with what I was doing, he would always end our conversations by saying, patience and persistence. That patience and persistence are an insurance policy against failure. So if anyone out there, if you're frustrated with whatever you're doing personally or professionally, just be patient and please be persistent. Because if you're persistent, in the end, I know that you'll win.
Yes, absolutely. Great words of wisdom to start this off. Now, you mentioned reliability-centered maintenance or RCM a few times. What is that for those that may not be familiar with it or may have heard the term but aren't exactly sure what it is?
Okay, so in a nutshell, RCM is a process that we use to identify what kind of proactive maintenance and other actions we need to do as responsible custodians so that we can achieve the kind of reliability we need and want from our equipment. So that means proactive maintenance, things like condition-based maintenance and scheduled restoration, scheduled discard, as well as things that we might have to do, like maybe a redesign to our equipment or instituting a new operating procedure, figuring out how often we should check our protective devices so that we're confident that they'll be available to us when we need them. For example, when I say a protective device, like a fire suppression system, you know, how often should we be checking our fire alarms?
So RCM is that holistic approach to making sure we're doing the right maintenance, maybe some re-engineering, but to make sure we minimize the consequences of those failures of the assets so that we're getting the most out of them for our business, correct?
Yes.
Perfect. Now, RCM is based upon 7 principles, I believe. What are those 7 principles?
Okay, so the 7 principles, 1, identifying functions, where that's when we identify what we need our equipment to do. 2, functional failures. 3 is failure modes. And when I use the term failure mode, I mean what specifically causes failure. So some people use the term failure cause, some people use the term failure mode. But that step is really important because another thing John Mowbray taught me is that we manage our assets at the failure mode level. So it's super important that we understand what is causing us not to realize that kind of reliability that we need and want. Step 4 is failure effects, which is a little story of what would happen if we did nothing to predict or prevent the failure mode. Step 5 is when we identify consequences, and common consequences are safety, environmental, operational, and non-operational. Step 6 is when we decide if there's any kind of proactive maintenance we should be doing, like condition-based maintenance, scheduled overhauls, and scheduled replacements. And then step 7, default strategies. Those things that we just talked about, like maybe instituting a new training procedure or a redesign to the equipment.
Excellent. Now, I believe it was step 4 you mentioned, the consequences of what happens if we don't do anything about this. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that piece? Because sometimes I see organizations just say downtime. Sometimes I'll see organizations, well, they'll put how much time it's going to take to repair, the cost of the repair, and so on and so forth. What is the right piece to put there?
Okay. You know, reliability-centered maintenance is like this dance, and one step follows another. So when you identify your failure mode in step 3, then you write your failure effect, which, like I said, it's a story of what would happen if we did nothing to predict or prevent it. Now, here's one of the keys, that reliability-centered maintenance is a zero-based process. So when we write our failure effect, we start from the very beginning. Okay, so let's say the bearing is in the process of failing. So increased vibration levels, and then you may hear audible noise, and then there may be heat at the end. But that's not all to the story, because once that bearing seizes, now we have to describe what that means to the organization. So does the machine shut down, the end process stops? So now what does that mean to production? So we're supposed to quantify, for example, if there are any production losses. Could anyone be injured or killed as a result of it? So we're supposed to write that failure effect robustly enough so then we can do step 5, which is identifying consequences, like I mentioned, safety, environmental, operational, and non-operational. Now, another thing that my mentor John Mowbray taught me is that the essence of reliability-centered maintenance is managing the consequences of failure. So with steps 3, 4, and 5, identify the failure mode, write what would happen if we did nothing to predict or prevent it, and then identify the consequences. From there, we can use steps 6 and 7 to decide what, if anything, we should do to either manage that failure mode or prevent the failure mode from happening. So in essence, what we're doing is we're managing the consequences of failure.
And I think that's very important to reiterate, is you're managing the consequences of the failure. You're not managing or trying to prevent all the failures itself. You're worried about the consequences of them. And I think that's very important to understand, because some organizations and engineers that I work with, they focus on the failure itself, not the consequences.
Exactly.
I often hear of organizations that are going to implement reliability-centered maintenance, predictive maintenance, condition-based maintenance, and failure mode effect analysis. Aren't these all related to RCM?
Yes, I hear this a lot myself. This is one of the biggest misconceptions about reliability-centered maintenance. I often hear people say, what are we going to do? We're going to do RCM, we're going to do CBM, are we going to do FMEA, we're going to do FMEA. So here's the thing. Steps 1 through 4, functions, functional failures, failure modes, and failure effects, make up the FMEA. When you add step 5 to that, which is failure consequences, that makes up the FMEA, or the failure modes, effects, and criticality analysis. Within step 6 of the RCM process, condition-based maintenance is embedded. Now, in the context of RCM, condition-based maintenance, predictive maintenance, those are what I consider synonyms. So if you're doing reliability-centered maintenance, you're already doing FMEA, FMEA, and you're already considering condition-based maintenance. It's kind of like one-stop shopping.
Excellent. So RCM will help you decide if you're going to do a condition-based maintenance approach, a fixed-time replacement, a fixed-time overhaul, and you're identifying all the failure modes using an FMEA or FMECA. So those are all wrapped up into RCM. So when someone mentions RCM, they can pretty much encompass all those various pieces that we just talked about.
Yes, exactly.
Excellent. So we're using RCM. We have our 7 principles that we talked about. Why are these principles so important for the RCM process? Do we actually need these principles?
Yes. You know, so like I mentioned, you know, RCM is like a dance and one step builds off of the other. Now, some of your listeners might have heard about streamlined versions of RCM, you know, quick versions, or like a PMO or preventive maintenance optimization. And, you know, generally speaking, there's nothing wrong with a shortened version or a quick version, as long as if you're going to implement one of those processes, you understand that you're not considering all of the failure modes. You know, you're only considering a select few that process might look at. So that's fine. But when you do reliability-centered maintenance, you have to have all those steps because one builds on the other.
Excellent. So they're building upon each other. So if we leave out any one of those principles, we're not going to get the results we want. We may not have the information to make the right decision, or we may not do the right action, or not do an action at all because we left out one of those steps, correct?
Yes. I mean, you know, I would counter anyone and say, well, which step would you leave out? You know, functions, where we identify the kind of reliability that we want. You know, would you leave out identifying what would cause failure? Would you leave out trying to, you know, identifying what would happen if we allowed it to fail and how that failure would matter? And then what should we do about it? So, from a common sense perspective, I can't see which step one would leave out.
It absolutely makes perfect sense. But the one question I do have is, how does the process such as maintenance task analysis or PM optimization or so on and so forth, how are we successful with those if we don't have these same sets of principles that build off of each other?
Well, okay, so let's take preventive maintenance optimization, for example. So with a process like that, generally speaking, what you do is you start with your current maintenance plan and you decide that you want to optimize it. So what you do is you take those maintenance tasks and you reverse engineer them and you identify what the failure modes are that correspond to those tasks. And then you write the effects and assess the consequences and then figure out if you should be doing some kind of maintenance or other action. So you actually are optimizing all the tasks that you're currently doing. But the big hole in that is this. You're only identifying those failure modes associated with your current tasks. What if you're experiencing some chronic unreliability, but you don't know it, but the failure mode that's causing it doesn't have anything to do with your current maintenance plan? So you see, it's preventive maintenance optimization is very focused. So can you get some good results? I mean, you know, sure you can, but the results are limited. So you have to accept the risk that you may not be identifying causes of chronic failure and you may not be getting as much out of a process like as you could with reliability-centered maintenance. So if you're okay with that, then, you know, then PMO isn't bad. It's just that you have to consciously accept that you're only going to go so far with it.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
So with a process like PM optimization, that may take us to 75, maybe 60%, maybe 80% of the way there, but it's not going to give us that last 20%, correct?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of percentages, it would depend upon what percentage of failure modes are already embedded in your current maintenance plan. So there's definitely going to be a hole, and you know how much would vary from organization to organization.
So we could combine PM optimization with, you know, some data mining, maybe generate some additional failure modes that we didn't have based on past failures. But even if we did that, it's still not going to be as robust and as powerful as an RCM process, correct?
Yes, that's right. And something that I've seen in the 21 years that I've been doing this is oftentimes organizations try to do that shortcut process because they think they're going to save time and money. But in the end, they probably expend more time and money, you know, trying to do a shortcut, and they don't get what they need. So then they try to do a little bit more, like you just mentioned, and then a little bit more and a little bit more, where at the end of the day, you know, if you do RCM correctly and you do it with someone who really understands the process, RCM doesn't take too long and it's not too expensive and it's not too difficult to do. It takes too long and it's too difficult to do when people who don't really understand how to do it are leading the process.
I think that's a very important piece there. The facilitator is critical to the success of the process, and not only the success in terms of getting the results, but how efficient we are with it, how involved we get people, how engaged people are. I think the facilitator is key to that, correct?
Yes, 100%.
Now, what is the one principle that organizations tend to struggle with the most?
Okay, I say that's easy, and that's writing functions. What I see is that a lot of organizations write functions as a matter of routine. Now, John Mowbray taught me that reliability isn't an entity in itself, but rather it's scattered amongst all of a machine's functions. So if you take the time to identify what you really want and need from your equipment, what you're actually doing is establishing the kind of reliability that you want. Then all you have to do is use the rest of the RCM steps to help you figure out how to get it. So writing functions has a huge impact, but I just think that a lot of people think it's kind of one of those steps where, all right, I did it and I checked the box, where if you really do it the way it's supposed to be done, you're actually identifying reliability.
Can you give me an example of a good function statement then that would help us identify reliability?
Okay, so like I said, what I see happening often is that organizations write function as a matter of routine. And a lot of times people are doing component FMEAs as opposed to functional FMEAs. For example, this would be a function as a matter of routine. Deliver compressed air to a tank. That would be a function for a compressor. But a well-written function that's going to identify your reliability that you want would be something like this. To provide compressed air that's oil-free at less than 100 degrees Fahrenheit at a minimum of 4,000 CFM, 110 PSIG output pressure to make up that compressor's portion of maintaining 14,000 CFM and 110 PSIG head of pressure to the plant. So you see the difference? Another one could be filter and remove particulates from intake air. That's a component function from a component FMEA. How about this one? To remove particles greater than or equal to 1 micron from the incoming air to the compressor. So you see, in one, we're just kind of writing a function as a matter of routine. And then the other one, we're giving detail where we're identifying and we're defining the reliability we want, greater than 1 micron. Another one would be monitor pressure level. That could be a function for a gauge. But if you write it from a functional standpoint, you would write to indicate main pump oil discharge pressure within plus or minus 3 PSI, because I'm describing how well I want it to indicate, for example, within plus or minus 3 PSI. So that's what I mean by writing functions as a matter of routine versus really sitting down and thinking about what you need this thing to do.
So in order for them to write those types of function statements, they have to understand what they need from the asset to operate that process or that manufacturing system or whatever the case is. They may need to reference some technical information or technical data from the manufacturer of its understanding if that asset is even able to deliver the requested performance. But it requires a lot of well thought out and well defined effort, correct?
Yes, it does. And you mentioned something that, you know, a lot of times when organizations go through this exercise correctly, what they uncover is that they've been asking their machine to do something that it just can't. And that's one of the reasons for chronic failure. So that's another really good byproduct of writing good functions.
They understand what it's actually able to do and what they're asking from that asset.
Exactly.
Excellent. So that was the one principle that most organizations don't do correctly. Which one do you think has the greatest impact on a successful RCM analysis?
Okay, so I think that answer is twofold for me. One, what we just talked about with writing functions, but the other one is how to write failure modes. You know, you can go overboard on failure modes and you can not go far enough with writing failure modes. And this is another reason why a skilled facilitator leading a team needs to be present. So if your failure modes are so detailed that you get into analysis paralysis, you're not going to get anywhere. And if they're so vague that they don't give you enough detail that you really can't figure out how to manage them, you're not going to get very far. So they have to be written at just the right detail so that you can identify an appropriate failure management strategy. So I would say those are the two biggest that have the biggest impact on the RCM process: functions and failure modes.
Now, from a failure mode perspective, I've often heard to failure modes as object damage cause, part problem cause. Is that the right level of detail, or do you need to go into more detail than that?
Well, you know, I think that at a minimum, a failure mode has to have a noun and a verb, right? But, you know, physical asset management isn't black and white. And again, that's why you need someone experienced in the RCM process helping you. But they need to be written at the right level so you can figure out what to do. And actually, I have a resource that I could share with your listeners. I have a training video that explains exactly this. So if they want to, all they have to do is go to rcmtrainingonline.com/explore, and they can get access to that video. And not writing failure modes in enough detail is one of the biggest mistakes that people make when applying RCM. And it's one of the reasons that some people think RCM takes too long and it's too expensive. So do check it out. If you do want to know more about failure modes, it's rcmtrainingonline.com/explore.
Excellent. We'll make sure to put that link in the show notes so everyone can access that video, learn more about this topic, because it is a widely discussed and debated topic based on my experience.
Yes. I mean, I could talk for an hour just on that. And I know we don't have that kind of time.
Now, if you had that magic wand, what would be the one principle you would want everyone to live every single day or apply every day to maintain plant reliability and drive reliability from a holistic standpoint?
Okay. If I had a magic wand, I would touch anyone who has anything to do with physical asset management, and I would say, don't forget the fundamentals. Don't forget the fundamentals of maintenance and reliability, especially in this technology-driven world. We need to be grounded in the basics. And all of those basics are embedded in the RCM process. And we've talked about them, most of them today already. The concept about reliability and FMEAs and FMEAs and CBM and preventive maintenance and failure finding and on and on and on. All of those things are embedded within the RCM process. And I think that there is a big charge today in our technology-driven world for organizations to cling to the shiny object or, you know, those advanced pieces of condition monitoring equipment that I think organizations think can solve all their problems. And that equipment is fantastic. And I mean, they are excellent solutions for a lot of organizations. But the point I want to make is, instead of just going for the shiny object and going and buying it and implementing it and thinking that it's going to fix everything, you have to be really logical about it first and apply those fundamentals. For example, what failure mode am I trying to manage here? What symptom am I trying to monitor? You know, how often should I be monitoring it? So get all those ducks in a row and then go to the technology. But yeah, don't forget the basics. There's nothing obsolete about the fundamentals. I think that they are ever more important today than they even were 50 years ago.
I couldn't agree more. I hear a lot about industrial Internet of Things and all these great, great technologies that you mentioned. But if you don't understand the failure modes and what you're monitoring to monitor that potential failure and so on and so forth, it's not going to be very effective. Like you said, you need to understand the basics. You need to understand the failure modes. You need to do the RCM or FMEA analysis or something, but you got to focus on those principles and not just collect data for the sake of collecting data.
Agreed. And you know, James, I get contacted several times a month from different people in different organizations. And what they tell me is their organization is in firefighting mode. They're running from one crisis to the next. They work in a reactive environment. And so I think it's important for listeners to understand that if that happens to be your circumstance, you're not alone. That, you know, if you pick up a maintenance and reliability periodical, you know, we read a lot about technology and a lot of processes, you know, in things like the industrial Internet of Things. But if you're not there yet, I want you to know that you're not alone. And if you are in that firefighting mode, then do start with the basics. Start with figuring out what you need your equipment to do and figuring out what's causing it to fail. Start there before you jump to a shiny object and know that you're not alone and that it is possible to get out of that reactive mode. Now, it's going to take a little bit of work. You know, nothing happens overnight. But if you can remember what John Mowbray taught me, patience and persistence.
Yes, absolutely. And you're exactly right. Many organizations are not at the point where IIoT is something they need to be worried about. They need to be worried about the basics. Plan scheduling, spares management, RCM, identifying failure modes, those sorts of things is where they need to focus, and they'll get a much better return on those if they do those properly, both better return in the short term and the long term.
Yes, exactly.
Now, we covered the RCM principles and quite a few things around those. Is there anything regarding RCM that we didn't touch on that you want to make sure we address?
I think we've talked about the key things, but I'd like to sum it up this way. I've also been reading on various forums online that some people are saying that RCM is obsolete. And, you know, I think that we've never needed it more than before because a lot of organizations are jumping to the technology before getting firmly rooted in the basics within their organization. So that's what I would say. I would say that it's exactly the opposite as obsolete. I think that I think there are a lot of organizations that are screaming with the need to implement the process.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Well, Nancy, I know you're busy, but before we go, where can people find out more about you? What events or activities are you going to be attending in the future? Where can people meet you and talk to you about this RCM stuff?
Oh, yes. So please visit my website at rcmtrainingonline.com. And I'm speaking at a bunch of conferences upcoming, and they're all listed on my website. And if anyone has any questions, there's a contact us page on my website. You can just fill that out. And I would be delighted to hear from any of your listeners. And it would be my pleasure to respond to any questions or comments that anyone has to make. So that's rcmtrainingonline.com.
Excellent. We'll make sure to put links to rcmtrainingonline.com, the resource you talked about on failure modes. We'll make sure to link to your book, The RCM Solution, and the book written by the late John Mowbray as well, RCM2.
Excellent. Thank you so much, James.
Thank you, Nancy, for taking the time today to talk to us about reliability center maintenance, the principles that it's based upon, why those principles are important, and then some common things that people need to watch out for when doing RCM. So thank you again for sharing your vast knowledge on this topic with us.
Great. Thank you. My pleasure.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.